seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're welcome along to Golf Weekly. It is a rooftop special. Repeat, a rooftop special.
Didn't want to be in the studio.
Nathan Murphy, hello.
How are you?
And Fionn Davenport, hello.
Hey, Joe.
I repeat once again, this is a rooftop special Golf Weekly. Now, what that means for you, the listeners, in terms of output is very little. What it means for us is that we couldn't get studio, but it's a beautifully sunny day. I'm in the sun, you're in the shade. Ever so slightly, but it's a beautifully sunny day, so we said let's do it atop the fifth floor here in Diggs Lane. We've put up a picture with this podcast, so you can see us sitting here smugly for this rooftop special.
Although I'm wrapped in a heavy coat because the temperature is below 30 degrees, so
you've been to Arctic, Colombia and Florida in recent weeks. I've been to Mallorca for 2 weeks in 32 degrees heat.
I haven't been anywhere.
You've been to hell and back as a Mayo man.
Pretty much. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I might cry.
Do that. Just here. So, we apologise. I think we all feel somewhat guilty. We've abandoned the listeners over the last month or so. It's fair to say it's dominated much of the talk on social media.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
At Golf Weekly NT. That is the reason, by the way, we didn't do a podcast, is I was away for a fortnight, Nathan, and the lads were busy covering for holidays. Fionn was away for a lot of it. Just couldn't be helped. One of those things. We do apologise. It's hard to work around holidays, as Ryanair know, Fionn, what?
Oh, indeed.
Travel
and also,
banter.
Given that the PGA Tour is now 364 days long, we have to, unfortunately, we can't stretch that way. We need to take time out.
Now, it is peaking just now, but
we're the Rory McIlroy of golf podcasts. We sort of turn up every so often.
Yeah. It is nice doing this on the roof.
It's great.
I feel very relaxed.
Yeah.
Maybe the roof of Luttrellstown next time will be nicer.
Absolutely.
Having just played 18.
We could get Peter Laurie involved. So, at Golf Weekly NT for your tweets, firstly. Looking forward to new pod, lads. I know you won't disappoint. Hashtag friend of the pod said Sean Hardiman 49 minutes ago. Rob Dunn, 3 hours ago, surely back for a Tour Championship preview with two sad faces from Rob. Owen Gallagher, Golf Weekly, more like golf every now and then. Come on, lads, we need a pod. Hashtag withdrawals, hashtag friend of the pod. Dave said, any podcast this week? This was 5 hours ago. If I were your sponsor, I'd have pulled my sponsorship.
Oof. Oof.
Dave.
They did pull their sponsorship already.
Yeah.
But they'll be back.
They will be back. Dave Balbi. Not sure where Dave's from. Interesting name, Balbi. B-A-L-B-I. Anyone?
I know. Italian?
Italian.
Is it?
I'm missing you guys. Listen to what Dave did 22 hours ago. I managed to save up your last four, and then I had a podcast binge. But no pod for 4 weeks. Two sad faces. Aaron Orr, this is almost 4 weeks ago. Are you going to grace us with a pod this week for the Tour Championship? Hashtag friend of the pod. Jocelyn Bonneau. She's the Canadian-American?
Yeah, Jocelyn Bonneau.
Jocelyn. Who runs the dating website. Do you remember
Huge
that?
Fans we are.
Jocelyn.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
She said, are you guys okay? I'm just checking in, which was nice. We're fine. We've been just off having a good time. David O'Sullivan, I'm in dire need of a pod. I'm in danger of not knowing what's really going on in the golfing world. That's us. Mark O'Shea said, I will even take At Malloy Joe giving us a shot by shot review of one of his low rounds at this stage. That is desperation.
Oh no.
No one wants that, really.
That was one of the reasons we didn't return earlier.
Oh dear. Has the pod finished? Wondered Mark Brennan. Don't let it be true. Duke just simply said, lads, come on, Jesus! Exclamation mark. Kieran O'D, this was September 7th. I'm hoping for a pod this week to hear all about Fionn Davenport's adventures in Colombia. How was Colombia? Oh, I should mention now for the rooftop special, Fionn's just put on his glasses, his sunglasses.
Because I'm in the sun and I can't see you
his
properly.
Ray-Bans are on.
Colombia was amazing. Bogota, it was a strange one, right? So I'd never been before. Bogota is a huge city, 10 million people, so it's busy. It's what you'd if you've been to any South American city, big cities are big cities. But because Colombia has its own issues.
What would they be?
Well, a recently ended civil war, a long history of narco trafficking and so on.
See that FARC, is that the name?
Yeah.
FARC are trying to go from terrorists to
political
politicians. It's a Sinn Féin job at the moment.
Yeah, they signed an agreement a few months ago, and it's very tenuous. But so I'm getting on the plane in Amsterdam, and just ahead of me, they stopped all the passengers getting on, and a young Colombian woman, maybe 24, 25, steady was here. Being escorted on by two armed police.
Okay.
And I later found out that she had was a drug mule who had served a sentence in Holland and was now being deported back to Colombia. So even before I went to Colombia,
yeah.
it sets it up in this way. Now, once there, you talk to Colombians and they are intensely resentful of the reputation of Colombia as just being like this cocaine haven. And while I was there, the third series of Narcos became available. So I'm sitting in a hotel in Cartagena up by the Caribbean and I'm watching Narcos and I'm this is like, and it's also where Gabriel Garcia Marquez lives. So I was like thinking, oh, that's magic realism. But it's Cartagena is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to in my life. Bogota is exciting, not that
Bogota
beautiful.
Bogota is the capital.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's amazing. It's an interesting place.
Can I boil it down to this question?
Go on.
As a travel writer, of course, you should go. As a Joe Malloy, Nathan Murphy.
Cartagena.
Who have a limited number of places they can go in their lives. You know, you're thinking 20 years without kids of cool holidays. Is Colombia a must-do?
Cartagena is a must-do, yeah.
Is it, though?
Yeah, it's one of the most beautiful places.
Like, I'm listing off the must-dos. I've got New York, I've got Hong Kong.
You've never been to New York?
No, I have.
Oh, okay.
I'm just talking for people here. Like, are we actually putting this in the top 20 places in the world you should go to?
I don't know. Probably not. But
Brand, that's all I wanted to know.
Jeez, wow. I didn't realize. So your criteria, you're the hardest.
was this before or after the guy who makes Narcos and one of the producers was shot dead?
Did you see that in Mexico?
Ah.
Because the fourth series of Narcos now moves on to the Mexican cartel. So he was shot dead in Mexico last week.
Sorry to the people of Colombia.
Colombia, and you should be. Here's an interesting one.
I asked
a guy who was, he ran graffiti tours. He's one of these kind of hipster alternative types in Bogota. Yeah. I asked him if cocaine was a popular recreational drug in Bogota. And he said no. Because the stigma of cocaine is having destroyed this country. So like young people who are into party drugs.
Yeah.
Cocaine is not, they'll take everything else, but cocaine is not one of them. And I thought that was kind of curious.
Interesting.
Mm.
In Mallorca, I'm on top of my world affairs now because you only have BBC World and all and CNN to watch.
Did you watch, does Shane O'Donoghue have a program on every hour on CNN?
No, I didn't catch it at all, unfortunately. But that's how I knew about FARC trying to be politicized. And also, they did a lengthy report one evening, which was very disturbing actually, about the prevalence of acid attacks on Colombian women, which was a terrible thing.
Just wow.
Angry men. We've seen so many angry men across the world in the last couple of years.
I didn't even hear that.
Disenfranchised men. It's a real problem that they will just knock on a woman's door, apartment door, or a woman walking down the street. Terrible examples. And it's totally random. They don't know the woman. And they will just fling a load of acid in their face and destroy their looks for obviously
because
forever.
I've heard of the acid attacks in London, but not in Colombia. So this is another reason why really Colombia shouldn't feature in the top 20.
It's struggling. Okay, we'll move on. That was a hell of a tangent. Jack Mortlock said he popped over to England for family and his uncles are now friends of the pod after playing 54 holes at Burn Hill. Shout out to Uncle Simon and David. There we go. Do recommend the pod to other people if you're travelling. Victoria Tatiora, this was the Victoria who travelled to
the
show.
We met up in Port Stewart.
She said, I'm in Moldova for the next 2 weeks. You'll understand why I need the pod. Please don't let me down, lads. That was on September the 6th.
Oops.
Finally
2 weeks
then.
In Kizzy now. No pod.
Oh, dear. Finally then, Richard Clune played the wonderful Falcon Lake course in Canada on Tuesday. The beer and shots for every birdie made it a great day. Ty Kegarty was in Port Rush. It was looking great. And Dan Holbrook, a man after your own heart, Fionn. Can we do a quick whip around to pay off the remainder of Mark Rowe's Sky contract? I have to watch it on mute, for fuck's sake. There we go.
Poor old Mark Rowe. He's not the most positive guy, is he?
When I was playing in the Pro-Am up at the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open.
What?
With Mario Lazabal.
What?
Suddenly,
you
suddenly,
what?
Sorry. I suddenly had a massive flashback to what? To when we were on air. And Joe discovered this fact. But we were playing with Jose Maria Lazabal, and suddenly Mark Rowe appears. His hair.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my.
He really needs
it's
to
It's a sort of Wurzel Gummidge, but shaved down the
middle. I was going to say, he's got a
Wurzel
Gummidge thing going on,
he
doesn't
has he? Let it grow so long, but he is still just so patently bald down the middle. But, on the sides now, it's out of control.
And I had in my head that he was controlling that for the television.
Yeah.
But then I saw him on recently, he just said, nah, I'm going with this.
Has he got a mad scientist look?
Yeah, definitely is a mad scientist. It's sort of as if he's going for a Marouane Fellaini, Phil Linnett style mop on top. But
again, a reverse mohawk.
Yes.
I mean, he looks less bald, obviously, because there's a lot more hair, but you just can't take your eyes off it. It's unmissable television. Mark Rose hair. One last thing. I have an email.
Wow.
Not every day you get an email.
Threatening.
Well, no. I'll get through this as quickly as I can. I mean, it's not an amazing story, but I think if someone's taking the time to write an email. It's from Roger Coogan in Brussels, hashtag friend of the pod. So he said, I was following a group comprising of Harrington, Perez and Peters recently. I was up in the grandstand behind the 13th as they were putting on that green. When they finished, I scuttled, you know, may never do. I scuttled down to the bottom of the grandstand to follow them to the next hole onwards. As I got to the bottom of the steps, the steward opened the rope for me to leave as the players are walking by. It takes me a few steps to realise what's happened, but then it dawns on me that he actually poured me into the group of players, caddies and stewards. ... I'm inside the ropes. So I walk behind them onto the 14th tee. I think to myself, well, I didn't try to get here and I didn't do anything wrong. So there's no sense in drawing attention to myself and I should just try and stay here for as long as possible. So I stuck in my headphones in my ears and I tried to look important and busy. The lads tee off down the 14th, par 3. They walk off the tee. We all walk down towards the green. Stewards hold the crowd, seeking to cross the fairway back as we walk through. Harrington plays a brilliant flop shot from the rough on the left, holds a 7-footer. I'm standing 12 feet from him on the edge of the green. They finish him on 13 and I figure, let's keep this going. They walk from the 14th to the 15th. I tuck in behind them. Stewards usher us through. 1,000-yard stare from me as I walk past with purpose. We're up in the 15th tee. I'm standing next to Harrington's caddy. This is unbelievable. They all drive off. It's a par 5. We walk down the fairway again. The stewards hold the crowds trying to cross the fairway back as we walk on by. As we approach the balls for the players to play their second shots, Stewart's looking at me funny. He starts walking closer. He gets to me. I say, okay, fair enough. I'm not supposed to be here. He simply smiles and asks me how I got there. But he's all business as I try to explain. As I'm explaining, he suddenly walks me back to the ropes. I say, don't worry, I'm not trying to make trouble. I say as I go back to the hoi polloi. Every now and then, the same steward catches my eye as I follow the group home. He didn't look amused, mostly just surprised. I know you guys get to do this all the time, but I don't, and it was great. All the best. Roger Coogan from Brussels, hashtag friend of the pod.
That's a great story.
Nice, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I've only ever done it once.
It's not a great story, like, but like, it's a good
did
story.
One of them say hello to him?
No.
Did they go to the toilet
and nobody else be on the fairway? There
seems to be no...
There's no relationship now with Thomas Peters and Potter Carrington.
No, you were kind of hoping that he would become friends with one of them.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's...
didn't happen. It's but a, because it's he seems like a nice guy.
Roger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seemed to fess up. You've got breaking news, do you?
No, I don't have breaking news. I have a competition.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Are you finished with all your texts and
correspondence? Tweets? Well, I have like a month of stuff to catch up on, but I am indeed done, yeah.
So since we're back, I thought we better make amends. We've got a few competitions coming up because basically people are just queuing up to sponsor this podcast.
Right.
We only go for the best of the best. We only go for the best of the best. So I don't know if you know this film, but the Paul McGinley Golf Academy has opened to the public at Mount Juliet Estate. Fionn's going to go. Of course, I know that. I was down there for 3 weeks.
No,
on a junket.
I do like the new Mount Juliet clubhouse.
I haven't seen it.
That's an aside. It's very modern.
The Paul McGinley Golf Academy at Mount Juliet Estate has redesigned the existing academy, reconfiguring and updating the current facilities and creating a specific coaching and fitting centre. Provides Mount Juliet with a newly sculpted 15-acre driving range, replicating all
the
golf
driving
course
range
shots,
is unbelievable.
Including full-length fairways, providing draw and fade shots.
Yeah.
Facilities, Joe, also include 2 putting greens and a short game area. And the Academy is using the most advanced teaching software, the TrackMan 4E, allowing all aspects of the game to be developed and taught, all instruction based around Paul's playing philosophy and the template, I presume.
What is Paul's what is Paul's playing philosophy?
Hit the ball 254 yards.
See,
and
Paul is a smaller man, as is the case with smaller men. Brings the club more around his body.
Yeah.
It's the only way to get leverage, clearly, if you're not Ernie Els. Is that his philosophy? Do we know?
Doesn't go into detail, but okay. Maybe we'll get Paul on soon and ask him about his philosophy.
That'd
basically,
great,
they spent £4.5 million to update the Paul McGinley Golf Academy at Mount Juliet Estate.
I have to say, and I'm not just saying this because it's a competition. I didn't know this was on the show today, but I was down there a couple of weeks ago and they've done a really good job. I mean, they have a lot of money into it. It's good. Anyway, what's the competition?
The competition, we're going to give a 4-ball away from Mount Juliet, and the 4 of you will get to go on TrackMan as well, so they'll bring you through your swing and
very good
teach you what. Fionn's give me a look of,
I like that comp. I want to win that comp.
It's a comp for golfers.
What's our mechanic? How do they enter?
our mechanic is
he hasn't thought of it. I know. That was a pro. Our mechanic, mechanic is. And what's going on in his head is,
tweet.
Shit, I didn't think of one. Let's do something on Twitter. Will I ask a question or will I not ask a question?
Tweet at Golf Weekly and
at Golf Weekly and T.
Golf Weekly and T.
And do what, Nathan?
And at Mount Juliet and
tell us who designed
the
golf course at Mount Juliet.
Oh, that's a good question. I know the answer to that. He's designed many courses around the world.
So, what's the name of the designer?
Majors.
Stop now.
I hear.
Sorry, yeah. Did I go into Ryan Tuberty late show style?
Yeah, a little bit.
You know what I mean?
Like I
who won the All Ireland on Sunday?
Sunday. Yeah.
Was it A? London. So what are we doing?
That's actually pretty good.
You have to tweet at Golf Weekly and T
and at Mount Juliet.
And you have to write Jack Nicholas.
And your name.
And your name.
And then we'll just randomly select one.
So will we leave out the Jack Nicklaus part now? So just you gave it away with 18 majors. Like, let's not patronise the listeners.
Yeah.
So you just want to come up with another question?
No, well, it's already taken up too much time. This is the worst comeback rooftop special I've ever been part of. So
it's a great prize, though.
No, that's good.
It is a good prize.
That's good. That's
even
good.
Fiona's
good.
Jealous.
I am jealous. I think
did,
it's a great prize.
I did TrackMan once, and it's very interesting.
It destroyed
I was there, yeah,
your
destroyed your swing.
For a day, but I mean, it was right, ultimately. So
it was right.
At Golf Weekly
it was right.
At Mount Juliet, write your name, and we'll pick a winner at random.
As the man down in Carton House, what was his name? Friend of yours?
Oh, yeah.
Who was showing you TrackMan, said, can't argue with the numbers.
No, you can't. I was coming from too far on the inside, but... It was an interesting experience because I was coming from too far on the inside, but I had grooved it in very nicely. And so the club face, I know I was making compensations, but the club face was hitting the ball in the right way. And then when I started coming from less on the inside, the club face was all wrong for that swing path, and it messed me right up for a long time. It's one of those things, like, if you're going to go changing that stuff, you really got to think it through.
Or be a pro.
Or, like, if I do this, I'm going to have to change a host of other things on my swing. Anyway... That's your tweets and texts. We're talking about East Lake next. We have reached the FedEx finale, as I'm sure you know. Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, or Justin Thomas, the most likely to leave East Lake on Sunday, $10 million richer. We've been absent while all this has been building up. Recent winners have included... Henrik Stenson at the Wyndham Championship a number of weeks ago had a brilliant back nine. Dustin Johnson at the Northern Trust Open beating Jordan Spieth. Justin Thomas living up to the hype 2-3 weeks ago. And then Mark Leishman most recently a wire-to-wire victory. I must confess, I haven't seen a lot of this through holidays and various other things. Of the Leishman, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson versus Spieth wins, what stand out?
Dustin Johnson. Beating Spieth in the playoff was one of the best.
He hit the
golfing
best drive.
Events of the year.
The drive he hit.
Yes, actually, sorry.
The drive he hit on the first playoff hole to cut the corner. So what it left him 80 yards ahead of Spieth and put like a small iron in his hand, whereas Spieth was left with a mid iron.
It was brave.
It was brave. It also was DJ showing this is my advantage.
Statement. Yeah.
I thought there was no. Greater example of how Johnson has developed than the final couple of holes of that tournament, because you saw both sides of it.
Okay.
So you saw the old DJ being able to take the risk, looking at the shot and going, all right, need to be pretty ballsy. Anybody sensible wouldn't take this shot on, but I know what I can do.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go for it. Then this lovely little flop in, like, he's only got himself, what, 80 yards.
I think he had a lob wedge in his hand.
Mm. For
put it to whatever, 6 feet, yeah. 5 feet?
So that side of his game has improved massively. But on the 18th, wasn't it, where he held the putt to get to the playoff.
That was phenomenal. It was DJ,
was
really
huge
was.
Huge pressure on him for that, because Spieth was way back and had typical Spieth style, put it to within 3-4 feet. You knew he was going to tap in, but all the pressure was on DJ.
What and did he hold?
Made a 10-footer.
Very good.
More, yeah.
Yeah, under enormous
pressure to force the playoff.
First time since 1999 that there was a playoff involving the world number one and two.
Two, yeah. It
wow.
was it was interesting.
Mm. When you think about that stat for a second.
Yeah, because Mickelson and Woods never went at each other.
Not really. Like, there was a Pebble Beach time, but not really.
I was interesting as well.
In playoff, though.
So DJ sitting there on the first playoff hole and he goes, I can make this shot. Spieth goes, I can't reach that.
Because there's water, isn't there?
Yeah, there's water. So you have to cut the corner over water. And you know Spieth is going, well, that's completely out of my planning because I can't, I don't have that length. So I have to go. And he actually creamed a drive into the middle of the fairway.
Right.
And then DJ steps up and absolutely murders one like 350 yards. So DJ winning is real sign because Spieth played well. I mean, really, really well. He also played really, really well when losing to Justin Thomas. Like, Spieth is the most impressive golfer of the year in my mind. Justin Thomas maybe has had the performance of the year in some respects.
Well, Jordan Spieth's been speaking about this in the build-up to Eastlake, where he's the top seed, Spieth, in the points race, followed by Thomas. And Spieth said that Thomas's five wins make him the leader for Player of the Year honours.
Yeah, and but that's Spieth being... Either he's taking pressure off himself or being generous to his fellow players. Because when Thomas won, did you see the big, big hug between him and Spieth? They're obviously friends.
A couple of weeks ago or at the major.
No, at the major, But even afterwards, like, there was handshakes. And it's not as if Spieth's not disappointed. He is disappointed. But he's also smart enough to know, it's like, well, it was out of my hands. Like, Thomas just burnt up the golf course.
After Thomas won the PGA, of somebody had tweeted in saying...
Emmett Kane.
Oh, yeah. Ballyhonus man saying, ah, they're too nice. They're not going to drive each other on to greatness because they're all too nice. But we were both making the point. Everything we have seen suggests the exact opposite.
Yeah.
The winningest group of young lads
and there's
in their
also,
20s
There was a story during the week about when Gary Player almost lost the third Open Championship but won it at the end. That afterwards, with the claret jug, he was in the jigger. Well, it must have been. Was it a St. Andrews? Anyway, but he was celebrating with all the other players that he'd beaten. Like, you know, this idea that somehow the fraternity of players is only a new thing. It's not made of nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, that they've always been,
I think, in any sport,
collegial.
When, in any sport where competitors don't have to physically clash, it's far easier to be friendly. It's far easier in tennis. And even, well, in tennis, you're still responding, I suppose, to some kind of physical force in their shots. And even in Formula One, there's crashes and there's coming togethers. Like golf, there's really never that point where someone's going to piss you off in the thrust of play. Because they've no way of doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You would have to cheat. You would have to do something totally unsportsmanlike.
The most egregious thing you can do whilst playing by the rules is what Dustin Johnson did with that drive to Jordan Spieth in the playoff. And that's not worth falling out over. That's different to a dirty shoulder
absolutely.
Or a bad tackle.
And also as well is that all important thing is that you win golf tournaments irrespective. It's nothing to do with the other guy. It's what you can do.
Yeah.
You have no control over the other guy.
You watched Mark Leishman wire to wire. I never quite got into this.
I mean, it wasn't because he led wire to wire and it was no less an impressive feat. And he certainly deserved it. He played brilliantly. He shot a 67 on the Sunday to cement the win.
Anyone chasing him down?
Yeah, he was chased down on Saturday. Spieth came close. Jason Day on Sunday. DJ sniffed around a little bit. Was it DJ? Justin Rose. Actually, Justin Rose was close enough.
Okay.
But they just never came. I think the best they got was, I could be mistaken, but within two shots.
Right.
But that was it. But otherwise, he had a comfortable cushion and he closed it out, as I said, with a 67. So, but it was nice. There was very good golf by very good players. Jason Day played very well. The aforementioned Justin Rose. Spieth for a bit. But then he kind of had a level par, I think, and then just disappeared. But yeah, it was fine. It was just wasn't that exciting.
So that brings us up to Eastlake. This time last year, we were heading towards Rory McIlroy back in form, about to do miraculous things in the playoff to win the $10 million and slingshot into the Ryder Cup in great form. And I guess for a chunk of the summer, we thought, well, maybe he'll come back to form around a similar time of the year, biorhythms and new equipment and wedding and all that. But
really, 58th.
It hasn't happened that way. So 58th is his ultimate finishing point.
And he's not an outlier here. He's the 8th of 10 defending champions to miss the Tour Championship.
It's almost amazing. As if getting the $10 million may somehow affect your motivation.
How are we summing up his play over the few weeks of the FedEx playoffs?
Poor.
Indifferent.
Uninterested.
Yeah.
That's why it's quite surprising that he's decided to go and play the British Masters. Now, I think he has to fulfil the requirements for the European Tour because he's simply missed so many tournaments through injury this year. But you just got the sense every interview after every single one of these tournaments was, just want the season to end. Or I just want something to click that I'm not expecting to click, and I go and do what I did last year and win the last two tournaments and win the FedEx Cup. I'm not expecting it to, but I really just want to get to this break that I now have in my head of 8 weeks that he seems to have planned out almost day by day as to I'm going to feel better on this day. I'm going to have rested for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. That'll give me 3 weeks back in the gym. That'll give me 3 weeks then back on the range. It's been very frustrating listening to him over the last little while, because everything he was saying after the last tournament was, I sort of suspected he was going to pull out of the Dunhill. That I'm done. I'm just done for the year.
Every time he mentions the Dunhill, he just says how much his dad can't wait for it.
He did say one thing, though. He made it clear to the Golf Channel that he wasn't entirely enthused about playing the two events. He said, some decisions aren't completely up to the individual. There was outside expectation from elsewhere. I played these events for two reasons, thinking that I still had a chance. Well, of course, he has to say that. And then, but for trying to fulfill obligations elsewhere. So there were two parts of it. So obviously he has commercial obligations that force him to play. And as Nathan points out, he certainly didn't give an impression that he wanted to be there. And it's funny because it happens. So this kind of fizzle out of a season happens on the week in which he celebrates his 10th anniversary on tour. So it's been a crappy old end of the year for him, you know. But I'm going to lob a couple of stats at you, right? So his first 10 years as a pro, 238 starts, all right? 122 top tens. So more than 50% of the events that he's entered, he's finished in the top 10. Now, we all know, 22 wins and 4 majors, 4 Ryder Cup appearances, 3 Race to Dubai titles, €44.8 million earned. But I think that one statistic, 122 top tens, is unbelievable. And dare I say, and it goes to show that impression can often belie the truth, I was really stunned.
Why, you thought he was more inconsistent than that?
Yeah, I thought essentially that this was a guy whose 10 years has been peppered by huge periods of great accomplishment, but also long, fallow periods of inconsistency.
I suppose we don't give him a lot of credit for the times he reverses into a top 10 finish on a Sunday.
Yeah.
So even though it does read very impressively when you look at it over 10 years, on so many of those occasions, because of the standards we set for him and he set for himself, too often on a Wednesday or Thursday, if we're recording the pod and he's finished seventh, we're realizing he was never in the tournament. He shot a great 64 on Sunday, which would almost break your heart more. And so it doesn't feel good at the time. You look at it overall, a 10-year period like that, it reads remarkably impressively. So I have a split reaction to it.
Okay. Nathan, what do you think?
To finish top 10 over half the time is obviously impressive. It's
incredible.
Like, if we were sitting here 3 years ago and he's 7 years into his professional career,
yeah,
the stats were just so much more impressive. And if you told him then, this is where you're going to be in 3 years' time, I'd say he'd be pretty disappointed as well. And the way this season has gone, not just for him, but for everybody else, must make it even more difficult to take. Like, you're talking about Justin Thomas, 5 wins. Jordan Spieth, 3 wins on the PGA Tour, seeming to compete every single week. Dustin Johnson having the best season of his career so far. And Rory just stuttering, and from very early in the season, unsure of himself with the injuries, unsure of his swing, unsure of his equipment. And as we said last time we were on, I just really hope he comes back in January, February and says,
no,
everything
excuses.
Is 100%. There are no excuses. Yeah. And what you see is me at my best competing.
He's had another chat with a rival podcast. I've listened to some of it.
I couldn't bring myself.
I really wouldn't be too upset listening to it. It's almost gone too pally now.
It's a difficult thing for the No Laying Up podcast, because
don't you curse
they
me.
Have got themselves into a very good relationship with Rory, which is no bad thing. They have the access now with Rory that, you know, unfortunately we just don't have. But the way Rory's career has gone over the last year, it's the one time you'd love to sit with Rory and ask him some sort of tougher questions that you've sat down at a lot of press conferences this year and say, if I play my best, I win. I feel like I'm playing my best. But you're not competing. You're missing cuts.
Yeah. I've only listened to maybe half an hour of it. It's a two-part thing. Some interesting things. He was talking about his wedge play just not being good enough. he's got a very big gap between his wedges yardage wise, so he's trying to like get three swings per wedge. None of this very uncommon, and therefore have 12 different distances. But he was saying like he recalled a story of when he was playing with Thomas Bjorn a couple of years ago, and again issues with his wedges, and he said, Thomas, come on, we'll get some lunch together. And he was asking about the wedges, and Bjorn was sort of saying to him, well, we have opposite problems in that your hand speed at the bottom of a swing gives you such length with a driver. I don't have your hand speed, so I don't hit my driver even remotely as far as you. But then with my wedges, I'm deadly accurate, whereas you are getting so much spin on the ball with your quick hands, and that's ultimately your problem. But Rory conceded in the interview he needs to work a lot harder in his wedges. He needs to sort it out, because he cited Dustin Johnson, who would have every bit as much of hand speed as McIlroy. And he was saying what's impressed him about Johnson's wedges is that Johnson is now taking no turf. He's just clipping the ball perfectly every time. Before, he said, Johnson used to have a big old divot. He doesn't have that anymore. The other interesting stuff was that the injury really has been a huge issue all season. So it's like a joint in his rib. It's not just like a broken rib or cracked rib. It's like a joint. He first noticed it in South Africa. And it, like, weirdly, the pain he felt was in his back. That's where it affected him, like the top half of the left-hand side of his back. And it just kept coming at different points all season, limited his practice. And the interesting thing was, even when he was playing, because, and like even we would know this ourselves, everyone listening would, you swing away from the pain.
Yeah.
It meant that, a bit like me with my TrackMan, to swing away from the pain, he had to swing very much from inside to out. That was the only way of avoiding that zip of pain through his swing. So he was coming really from the inside. So he was saying all year he had to play this big draw, like slingshot draw. And he's like, the courses we play on now, you have to be able to play it both ways. So that was really inhibiting him. And he'd really worked very hard on playing a fade.
That is quite interesting. And actually, I am going to listen to it now. Just I wanted to hear that.
What you have to say about those podcasts. Funny, I think about it now. If we ever get Rory on News Talk, I just don't care about the common listener anymore. I'm going balls deep into Golf Chat.
That's why we just bring him on Golf Weekly.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying to the common listener, you're not going to like a lot of this, but these are questions I want to ask him. I'm going to talk to him about his wedge play for 20 minutes.
There's no doubt. And I read comments similar to what he expressed on air. You know, the idea that the injury was forcing him to play in a certain way. So, I mean, the wedge problem is a bit of a legacy problem. It's not just this year. He's had it for a little while. So it's fine. And Dustin Johnson is the perfect example of someone who can address a big problem in his game. And you can address it successfully. Like, I mean, the man's a genius. So, but here's the other one. Yeah, but it's the practice. And he says because of the injury, he hasn't been able to practice and whatever. Fine. So this year is a bit of a write-off. The second problem he has, as we all know, is his putting. Now,
I haven't got to the putting part yet. I wonder, do they get into the putting?
Because you look at the stats, though. How many players, after 10 years on tour, fix their putting? That's not an easy fix. It just isn't. And now maybe they're linked. Like when he was just killing everybody, like he was hitting irons into 3 feet. So all of a sudden he was just draining putts. So it wasn't as much of an issue. This last year, or the last couple of years, his distance control hasn't been as good, so he's further away from the hole. So all of a sudden, the putting problems are magnified. But the truth remains is that he definitely has an issue with putting. A 10-year veteran of the tour does not quickly fix a putting problem.
I'd imagine he knows that as well.
Of course he does.
In that interview he did recently with the breakfast show on American TV, he was reeling off his stats of how good he is from within 5 feet, was it? It's between 5 and 15 feet his problems are. But I don't know how you can get an exact stat for that, but clearly that is mental, that when he hits to within 5 feet, just the buzz he gets from having hit a wonderful wedge shot or a wonderful iron shot means he's walking onto the green, he's got the strut, he's just tapping it in. But if it's 12 feet away, he's annoyed at himself because he knows what he can do. His concentration probably isn't at the right level, so maybe he can't fix his putting or it'll stay at a similar level, but surely with his talent he can improve his wedge play.
There was one, and I could be reading too much into this, so I'll throw it out to you and tell me what you think. Remember about a year ago he did another chunk of these interviews. It might have been with the same No Laying Up guy, and he said he had 10 majors in his head. Remember that? He did definitely say 10 majors. So he was talking, like, so much of these interviews he does now are like a celebration of how normal he is. You know, I'm well balanced, I'm normal, and I want to get married. And they were talking briefly about Tiger. And He just said, it was sort of throwaway, but he still said it. He said, I look at Tiger's level of fame and what he has to put up with. And he said, you know, with regard to having a good life, if I have to win half a dozen fewer majors than Tiger to not have Tiger's madness, I'll do it. And I did the quick maths and I said, oh, that's 8 majors. So on some psychological level, you've almost marked off 2 majors in your head here since last year because it's been such a bad year. That's kind of interesting. And I was thinking of Harrington, who said that one of his biggest issues after he won 3 was that we all set ourselves limits, even subconsciously, in all aspects of life, you know, what we think we could realistically achieve. And he was like, deep down, I can't get myself to believe I should get past 3. I never thought I'd even get to 3. I can't bring my mind to think I should get 5. And I just wonder if McIlroy's ambition, or just on some deep level, it was just striking that within the space of a year, why didn't he say 4 less than Tiger? Why, you know? And it's a, I appreciate you can read too much into these things, but it was just quite striking that he was saying, if I have to win half a dozen less than Tiger to have a less crazy life, then I'm okay with that. It's a very healthy attitude, but it frustrates the golf watchers enough. So.
But I don't know.
I'd love him to say, I've decided I'm going after Tiger's record in a big way.
Yeah,
I'm dedicating myself to that. Sacrifice. Like, put it this way. When he flew in for the most recent FedEx event, he was like in Bermuda having just like a week away with his wife for the hell of, you know, because Bermuda's where they had their first date, he revealed.
Then he was going to see Ed Sheeran on our
favourite island. He flew in for the Pro-Am like that morning. So my point is this, injury notwithstanding, if you're obsessed with chasing down Tiger Woods as 14, then you're spending the week putting every single day on the green.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's not doing that. He's in Bermuda. Now he'll say, look, I'm a more normal person.
That hasn't been Rory for years, though.
I know.
It's not as if, like, this is like when I eventually make a decision. Like, that decision was made. It's like it's been made years ago.
I applaud Rory the human being, but I just think the more we hear from him, we are understanding why the guy with that much talent is not fulfilling the talent. Like, we are in the midst of that now. We are watching the prodigy, the next Tiger, not fulfill his talent. That's the process we're in.
Although, mind you, in fairness, with all respect to Rory, that's always the problem. Once Tiger leaves a gaping hole, we automatically go to, well, the next really great guy is obviously the next Tiger.
Sure.
When clearly the next Tiger maybe hasn't even been born yet.
But he should have more than 4 majors. You know?
He should have more than 4
one
majors.
One of the reasons why you would always want to talk to Rory on the podcast is that while when he's talking current events, maybe he's a bit on message, but when he's talking past events, you really
very
get
insightful.
The honesty.
Yeah,
I do wonder, say, in 10 years' time when you sit with Rory.
Yes.
Because I definitely think there will be that moment of realization sometime over the next couple of years of, whew, I've hit my 30s, time is running out.
Yeah.
I'm really going to knuckle down over the next while. And maybe he does get to 7 majors and he's like, if I'd just done it that little bit earlier, I could have got to double figures.
Yeah.
I wonder as well as part of it that he's looking around at the moment and looking at Spieth and Thomas and DJ and John Rahm and all these guys and thinking, if I have to put that level of dedication in,
is it worth it?
Even still, am I going to reach double figures? Mm. Maybe I only win 4 more, and maybe if I just potter along, I'll still win 2 more. And that's okay.
I'm a middle-aged has-been, so who cares what I have to say.
But what about Rory?
But the thing about Rory, like, I...
A has-been?
Yeah. I'm a never-wasser.
no, not worth the glory days, Fiona.
I always think with Rory is that he seems so more... He seems very concerned with being on message, as they all do at that level, and there's so much at stake. I wish Rory could understand that making the honest misstep will make him a much more admired figure. Just be the guy. He's not a bad guy. He's actually a good guy in the sense of, you know, he's smart. He's actually quite funny. When he allows himself to be funny, he's very funny compared to, you know, your typical golfer. And so if he just be that guy and say the thing that occasionally might cause you a bit of bad press and go, whatever.
He does do that all the time.
I know, but
you know,
anyway.
He does. Like, I can't, like, literally, you listen to the podcast again. I like him so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's by far the most interesting golfer in the moment.
Well, like, I think Spieth is very interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Okay, not by far. Him and Spieth. Like, he is just amazing. All of us are massive McIlroy fans. It's almost talking out of a slight frustration here as opposed to being critical of the guy, because he's amazing. And look, his life seems very healthy, you know, and while we only get to see him on a golf course, and so that's a bit frustrating, you have to applaud someone who's gone from Hollywood, Northern Ireland, to global superstar, close to a billionaire probably by the time he retires. And he's not mental.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, like,
and these are not small things.
No, it's
these are really, really big things to have accomplished.
So, like, golf is 10, 20, 30% of his life. He is.
Yeah, I agree.
He's done so well.
So just come on the damn pod, Rory.
Come on. Yeah.
But it's almost, so Shane Lowry's at a slightly different level and obviously he's having his own struggles at the moment. And Shane, as we know, gets frustrated when people question him and question his form and all that. But the reason people question him, the reason people question Rory is because there is this fondness for them. People genuinely want them to go and do well and achieve something.
Like, Justin Thomas should win 4 majors in his career. I don't really care if he does or doesn't. No. I really care that Rory fulfills his potential. Well, that's the difference.
There's a kind of misplaced ownership
before we
that
leave,
we Irish have.
Rory, slightly linked with Rory, is we've sort of mentioned there that Rory was seen as the natural successor to Tiger. But looking at the figures, it seems Jordan Spieth is the man right now.
Yeah.
That the American TV ratings over the course of the season, generally, when Spieth is winning or Spieth is contending and in the top 2-3, they have been the highest ranked viewing figures of the year.
Wow.
So when he's competing, people are starting to switch on. Now still, compared to where they were when Tiger was competing.
What, is there any number differential?
The final round of the Northern Trust, which was the playoff, a 2.5 overnight rating. Fourth best rating for a non-major in 2017. The top one was one of the ones that Spieth had won earlier in the year. The Pebble Beach Pro-Am, where he won by 5 shots. Travelers Championship, where he beat Daniel Berger in a playoff, were the top two outside the majors.
I mean, he gives a running commentary, which is great TV all in itself, and is liable to hit a terrible shot or a good shot at any one moment.
Yeah.
So Rory is 8th in the world. It's a winless 2017. He's going to play Lee Westwood's British Masters next, and then Dunhill, and then this 8-week rocky montage period of rejuvenation.
I do wonder when he's playing the British Masters, because I was just looking. I'm in Newcastle next week for a game.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
it's not until 4:30 on Sunday evening. I was thinking there's an early flight. It's there's definitely going to be a part of him that's walking around this golf course in Newcastle in October, thinking, if that's not going to be motivation to get back on track.
Yeah. So
what's this? What are these things? Oh, winter gloves.
Yeah. Imagine playing in the cold again. Actually, one thing I'll say about no lane up. A great first question. Rory, when was the last time you paid for golf? And he went, oh God.
Never.
It was when he was 15 was the last time.
He actually, at 15, he was an
American course. No. A very familiar course, like one that holds big tournaments. $250. Not cheap.
No.
So that's Rory. We'll take a short break and we're back with final thoughts on Eastlake. Not really sure I have too much to add on Eastlake, actually. $10 million, of course. That's become a total anticlimax for
Spieth me. Spieth will win.
I like the fact there might be something else, and the fact maybe like it might be Spieth and Thomas and the whole friendship thing and them going head to head. I just like the way that, so we've spoken for years about how disgusting and disgraceful.
Now $10 million is about, you know, not that much money.
It's not that much money, but also now the players are talking about it slightly differently. It's you know, obviously the money is important, but you know, it's the prestige. The prestige of winning at the end of the year. I saw Justin Rose talking about it. Yeah, like it's such an important event now. Like, it's definitely on my bucket list of events I want to win. And not about the money.
No.
Is prestige another slang term for dollars?
I think prestige is the word they were emailed by the PR person in the office.
Can I just give you a little stat attack here? This is kind of interesting.
It's your second stat attack of
the
pod.
It is a bit. So here's one, right?
I should remind people this is a rooftop special.
The rooftop special. The birds and the cranes and the digger that you can hear making noise. And Nathan's foot sliding off the table.
What is that about?
So you know the way, invariably, when you see a guy with a 54-hole lead and then he blows up on the Sunday, and invariably you go, choker.
Nice to meet you.
So I was looking at, so I was looking at some of the stats. So how the top 10 leaders fared, like, after a 54-hole lead. And it really, the percentages are markedly different if you're a top 10 player, top 25 player, or outside the top 25.
So presumably the lower down you go, the more you choke.
You just ruin the stat.
Yeah, so 77.8% conversion of a 54-hole lead for the players in the top 10. And so in this year, 7 went on to win. It goes down to 68.8 if you're in the top 25. But if you're outside the top 25, get this, right? 8.6%. Wow. Like, it's a massive drop.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so that was that. And so this year, they were looking at this year, and this season was no more different to any other year. 52 players took the lead or a share of the lead into Sunday. Just 19 of them, or 36.6%, closed the deal. Top 10 leaders scored 1.7 strokes better. Now, there is one outstanding outlier in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is Tiger Woods, whose conversion percentage on a Sunday was 93%.
He was good, you know. Whatever happened to that guy?
That guy. He's now a vice captain at the President's Cup and absolutely
can't wait
thrilled
for that.
To be a part of it.
The only Tiger Woods news I've seen of late is that his tournament's in trouble.
Yeah, so the PGA Tour released its 49 tournament schedule on Tuesday, which is worth $363 million. And so the Quicken Loans, which is hosted by Tiger, is currently without a title sponsor or host course.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So Tiger's looking for a course to pay him to bring his tournament.
Yeah,
and
pretty
he's
much.
For a sponsor.
But like the fact that there's no sponsor lining up to go, I'll do it, suggests that maybe.
I suppose.
Could his brand be toxic?
Someone else said that to me this morning.
I think it's almost that, like, well, how is he? Might be the question.
How
you know
is
that, that stint in rehab? Is he going to be there for the tournament?
He won't play.
No, I know, but is he going to be there? Is he going to be in good health? Will he be able to give us some time over the next couple of months to promote it?
These are all valid questions.
You're a sponsor that you're asking those questions.
Because I was saying it to a friend of mine, and he used exactly that term. It's because his brand is toxic. And I says, I don't know if it's toxic. How relevant is he now? Mm. And will he be there? It's not the same as Arnie at Bay Hill. Because Arnie was 70.
Yeah.
Like, nobody expects Arnie to play.
Probably still moves a bit better than Tiger Woods. He's got to shake your man's hand.
If it wasn't toxic after the scandal, is being a loser and injured and old worse than having multiple affairs?
Well, in the American dream, I would say yes.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Anyway, so how the mighty have fallen is really...
Jason Day has changed caddy as well.
Yeah, his long-term caddy, like not just his long-term caddy, basically his father figure for more or less his entire life, Carl Swatton. So this basically seen as a far bigger surprise than Phil and Bone splitting up or Rory and JP splitting up.
Yeah.
They first met when he was 12.
Yeah.
Not long after Jason Day had lost his father and his mother and he was sort of developing a drink problem or starting to develop a drink problem, was going off the rails completely. He took him under his wing, sent him off to a private school. Has still going to stay on as his coach.
Oh, good. Okay.
But is just going to give up the caddying. Obviously, Jason Day's had a bit of a struggle this year, so he obviously just felt like he needed some sort of a change.
He's hired a friend anyway. I think it's very similar to McIlroy. Mm.
Yeah, very similar.
Oh, yeah. There's no word on who's going to be caddying for McIlroy.
Good point.
He doesn't really need to make a decision, I guess.
No, not yet.
Early next year.
One final thing I saw as we bring this rooftop special to a close is Paul Laurie's been talking about the cost of golf, and Scotland lost more registered golfers in 2015-16 than any country in Europe. Now, I appreciate probably had more to lose, but Laurie's just about how bloody expensive it is, and there's got to be a way to bring down the price. And the short answer to that is, like, how? I don't know if there is. Equipment's not going to get cheaper. That's a huge cost. If you're going to get coaching, that's not going to get much cheaper. And membership green fees, like, most golf courses are not in trouble, but, like, scrimping and saving every penny they have.
Do you follow Paul Laurie on Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a golf academy slash some sort of 9-hole course or par 3 course, and they definitely seem to do a lot of alternative type competitions where you maybe on a Tuesday evening during the summer and you can have a couple of beers. Basically anything to get people in for a couple of hours and that's all the amount of time you have to dedicate, because whatever about the cost, it's the cost and the time.
When was the last time you played?
I played about 3 weeks ago. Played in the John Giles Golf Classic.
Oh, how'd you get on?
Well, my new swing didn't hold up under the pressure as I had hoped. Hit some sensational shots, but
if you
just
do say so,
lacking a little bit of consistency.
Well,
how did who'd you play with? Kilbane and Dave McIntyre.
Kilbane and Adrian Barry.
And how did Kilbane play?
Not well. Adrian Barry did not play well. In fact, I'd say I was the outstanding player of the group, which is never a good sign.
So you didn't win then.
But I did hit 18 in front of John Giles, straight down the fairway. the most magical three wood I've ever hit.
Oh, did you?
Just short of the
green. In front of John.
Far cry from. Do you think he like you now?
No.
It's a far cry from when we played in front of him and he gave out about us being slow. Yeah. Yeah. Him, and he was playing with Babs Keating.
Wouldn't be like Babs to give out.
Anyway. Anyway. Okay, we're pretty much done. If you need to go and catch a flight. So, I don't think I've played very much either.
I played last week, garbage. But I'm off to the Czech Republic next week to test out some of the golf courses there.
You wouldn't have mentioned you work on a golf podcast where...
Yeah.
Because, just so we're clear, we're going to have to implement some sort of a rule that if Fionn goes off on a golf junket, he can't come back and talk about it on Golf Weekly.
That's unfair and unkind.
Because we're not getting to go.
Oh. You're more than welcome to organise your own junkets.
Yeah. Joe gets a...
St. Andrews seemed to be on for us and we just sat in our hands.
Come on, let's do it.
Story of our lives.
But I think... this is definitely like taking production meetings too far. I think we can only get out with the guy who works there as a three of us can go. And I feel like Dave McIntyre has been a Trojan worker all summer. So how do we do that?
So it'll just be me, Nathan, and Dave. And then you know, what? You what?
It's important that you don't tell me until the day you've played.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah. Well, we'll sort that out another time. Anyway, we're done. That brings this rooftop special. It was very enjoyable.
It was nice. Relaxing. Very relaxing.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. Okay, well, if you're not around next week, we'll try and rope Dave McIntyre into it and talk to you about the FedEx finale. Good luck. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket now. Little J.D. Starter.